From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 14th day of December 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett, Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, will be here too to take a look at the cash grain side of the situation. And then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss what's been happening in the agricultural weather forecast, especially for Argentina and Brazil. That with Mike Tenorum at T-Storm in Chicago, Illinois. Along the way, we'll check in on the agricultural news right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason for this Thursday afternoon. We're joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting in Waco, Texas. Hey, good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Todd.
Well, let's talk about a rough day, maybe a rough week in Chicago, especially for the soybeans. They were down more than 10 cents across most of the months for this Thursday. Is this just part and parcel of being in the month of December?
I think most of it can be attributed to that. However, you know, I guess the weather forecast, at least for South America for right now, is okay, no major problems. So that kind of took a little bit of the steam out of it that we had maybe here a couple weeks ago. The trade was a little bit worried about some dry weather in South America. But you can see the way the market here traded today that a lot of today's action was unwinding the long soybean, short corn, long soybean, short wheat spreads. And this is part of being that part of the month of December. People that have huge positions on, they started here because a week from today, probably a lot of people is going to be their last day. They're going to take Friday off and they're going to start making a long, Christmas weekend out of it. So you have a lot of people right now beginning to move out of their positions prior to Christmas, prior to the end of the year. And I think you could probably attribute most of soybeans' weakness to that unwinding of that long corn, short soybean spread. So when they unwind that short, then they sell. Or I mean the long soybean, short corn, they'll sell the beans, so that goes down, and then that provides underlying support to the corn market, and that's why the corn market closed fractionally unchanged.
So I was looking at the January and the May chart for soybeans. We've been down 6 of the last 7 trading days or sessions for each of those contracts. And we've gone from the top to the bottom of the trading range, I guess, or thereabouts. Not quite to the bottom for both, but near enough at this point. Is there any concern from your part that we'll break through that and have much downside risk for the soybeans?
Well, we could, but this is a place for it to find support. Like you said, we're kind of back to our early October lows on the January contract. Was about 663, and we closed here about, 963, and we closed here at 967. So they're probably, we should begin to find some support here tomorrow. If you look at some of your technical indicators, they also suggest that the market is in an oversold category or oversold area. So you may have some profit taking from the short side tomorrow, and that may firm things up again. But it's real critical, I suppose, from a technical perspective, that soybeans kind of hold this area in here. Now, when I go over and take a look at the Central Illinois cash soybean chart, if you drew a line on the rally highs that we had during September, and then the most recent rally high that we had here in early December, and then drew a parallel line and took it down to the lows that we posted here in November, Our 10-cent decline today should be down against that line. So that is still the cash market. The way I would look at it would still be in a sideways to higher trend, but we're just going back to the bottom end of that sideways to higher trend on the cash market. And like you said, on the futures market, we're in a more of a sideways type affair, and we're back to our October lows on the futures contracts.
So at this point, without any real change in conditions in South America, it looks like even if they've got a big crop, and which they've said this week that they had, even Argentina, the Buenos Aires Rosario Exchange, up their size of the soybean crop just slightly, things should move to the upside. We've got some time once we get to the beginning of next year. Will there be much pressure, do you suppose, from folks moving either corn or soybeans into the marketplace once we get into January?
Yeah, well, historically, farmers have a tendency to start moving grain into the pipeline during the month of December. And then you begin to see a lot of movement, especially the first of the year. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be hedge pressure movement. That could be movement grain that's already been sold for January delivery or winter delivery, whatever. But my guess is farmers, you know, between now and March 1, their cash flow needs begin to just steadily increase from now until March 1. And that's going to force a lot of movement of grain into the marketplace. Now, many of them may decide to opt for a basis contract. That kind of gives them 70% of their contract value. And then that 25% is held back for margin calls if the market would move lower. So you may see some of that. If you see that, then you won't necessarily see the downward pressure, but you won't see any underlining support from the commercials trying to buy grain from the farmer because he's moving it into the marketplace without having to put a price on it. So usually, you know, when you get into the first 10 days of January, you have a tendency to have a strong seasonal in soybeans that kind of go up. And I think that's kind of related to cooler than normal temperatures. And I think some of the long range weather maps are indicating it's just a matter of time that we're going to see some colder weather come in, at least in the eastern Corn Belt. And that has a tendency to provide underlying firmness to the grain complex because it slows movement and it increases demand for livestock.
How does the corn chart look to you?
Not any different, really, than it did here a week ago. We finally got rid of the December contract. It expired here at noon today, but it expired down here in this 337 area. So, you know, from a lead futures option, we're still in a, I would view as a 340, 360 trading range. We're just now working our way down to the bottom end of that with the December contract expiring. Now, what a lot of technicians will be watching now over the next 5 to 6 days, will the March futures, which will be the lead contract tomorrow when we start off, or later on this evening, I guess, that'll be the lead futures contract. And we'll see whether or not the March contract slips down to where the December went off the board at. So that would suggest to me technicians will be watching to see if this March corn would slip back to the 338 area and whether or not it can find support at that point and then maybe bounce off of that and then maybe go back to the 350 area, which is the middle part of that trading range. So corn is still on a lead futures basis is a sideways market, and it's just a function of the December contract having gone into expiration here over the past couple of weeks and it finally expired today at noon. So now we got the March contract, and it's coming on board here. I don't have the somewhere here around. What do we close the March corn at?
348 3/4.
Yeah, 348, 350 area. So it came on now as lead futures in the middle part of that trading range. And like I said, what the technicians will watch now, and I would say between now and next week, between now and the end of between Christmas, whether or not that March contract will slip back all the way to fill that contract or only slip back half the way and then turn it around and reverse out of it. Those will be things that I will be watching to kind of confirm that the corn market, the worst is over on the downside. The cash market, as I mentioned last week, we kind of broke out of that cash trading range that we were in on Central Illinois cash corn. We kind of fell back into that range, and now we kind of bounced back out of that. So I think with the narrowing of the basis, you can tell harvest is over with. So now we're kind of in a seasonal move here where prices should try to strengthen, but our demand factors, I don't, at least for right now, I don't think they're as rosy as what USDA paints them to be on the supply-demand table. I guess we'll have to kind of wait and see over the next quarter to see if export demand does begin to pick up. I know ethanol demand's been good for corn, but export demand has been running underneath what it needs to run to meet USDA's projections, and that same way with soybeans. So the January report, I think, will give us, that'll kind of finalize this year's crop size. And again, when you get into that January report, we could see surprises either way on that thing. USDA could end up lowering the yield, raising the yield, lowering acres or raising acres. So we're probably bound to see some volatility around that January crop report. But other than that, we're just basically waiting around for a weather problem to come along to reduce crop production ideas or the visuals. To try to see if we can see any kind of visual of supply tightening as we go down the road that would justify prices to kind of move higher.
That is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. In today's agricultural news, U.S. lawmakers from states that produce corn for ethanol plants said on Wednesday they would consider proposals from Senator Ted Cruz of Texas to help the oil refining industry cope with the nation's biofuel regulation, but would never agree on anything that diminishes the program. The price of U.S. renewable fuel credits sunk to their lowest levels in 2 months amid ongoing efforts by President Donald Trump's administration to mediate talks between the rival oil and corn industries over the renewable fuels program. Representatives of both sides gathered Wednesday at the White House, and it was agreed that Cruz would circulate proposals to corn state lawmakers in the weeks ahead that could help oil refining companies meet the RFS. This according to the offices of Iowa Republican Senators Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst. Well, members of the U.S. Grains Council, the U.S. Soybean Export Council, U.S. Wheat Associates, U.S. Rice, the National Corn Growers Association, the National Sorghum Producers, and the National Barley Growers Association have welcomed a joint statement issued this week from 17 countries participating in the 11th Ministerial Conference of the WTO, that's the World Trade Organization, in Buenos Aires, Argentina, that emphasized the importance of supporting farmer access to the full range of tools and technologies available and opposing regulatory barriers lacking sufficient scientific justification. A statement from the group reads, having in mind the importance of transparency and predictability to international trade, we call on all members to strengthen the implementation of the WTO. Government officials from Kenya, Uganda, Costa Rica, the Dominican Republic, Chile, Canada, Colombia, Argentina, and the United States delivered remarks in favor of the joint statement of understanding on December the 12th. The statement, it said, demonstrates global support for all farmers and the tools and innovations they need to protect crops from devastating diseases and destructive pests while delivering safe food sustainably to world consumers. And that's a quick look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Next week, I'll hit the road with the agricultural economist from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Out with us next week, Jonathan Kappas, who covers agricultural policy. Todd Hubbs, who you hear often here on our program, talk about the price of commodities. Scott Irwin will be there. I'm sure that we'll take up what's been happening in the RFS, among other things. Dwight Robb, Dale Latz, Nick Polson. And, of course, Gary Schnutke. If you'd like to come, you still can. Even if you've not registered, walk-ins are welcome. The cost is $75. We'll be in DeKalb on Monday at Miranda's Banquet Center, on Tuesday in Peoria at the Paradise Hotel, Springfield at the Crown Plaza as usual on Wednesday. On Thursday, we'll be in Carlisle in southern Illinois. This is a new venue for us at Bratz Wildlife Lodge and Winery. And then we'll wind up our week-long tour of the state in Champaign, right here at the I Hotel and Conference Center for the Illinois Farm Economic Summit. Registration opens each morning at 7:45 a.m. All the details are on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Again, walk-ins are welcome. If you've not pre-registered, just walk in. The cost is $75, and I sure do hope to see you there. You know, it's been over a decade since the Senate Ag Committee has held a hearing on agriculture security, but they've met now, and biodefense experts told the committee something they've heard before. The U.S., they say, is ill-prepared for an international or natural disease outbreak that could devastate the nation's food supply. Here's how former U.S. Senator and now co-chair of a Blue Ribbon study on biodefense, Joseph Lieberman, sees it.
In 2002, when the SEAL team made its way into a cave in Afghanistan, and where Osama bin Laden had been hanging out, they found among the various documents a list of pathogens that were clearly focused on biological terrorism.
Six of those pathogens targeted livestock and poultry, and four targeted crops. Lieberman told the Senate Ag Committee his Blue Ribbon panel found poor U.S. agency coordination, focus, and funding in an area he says can be just as scary as a nuclear threat, citing a recent report that North Korea may also have bioweapons. Lieberman once chaired the Senate Homeland Security Committee.
I really appreciate the fact that as you begin to work on a new farm bill, this is a moment of opportunity to really build on what the previous farm bill did. When it comes to agricultural security.
Lieberman's panel calls for a national biodefense strategy that the White House is now working on, countermeasures for livestock disease outbreaks, and a prevention fund for animal health. Former Joint Chiefs Chairman General Richard Myers heads Kansas State University, doing animal and plant disease research for the National Bioagro Defense Facility, or NBAF, being built nearby in Manhattan, Kansas.
And by the way, I think agriculture and food are critical components of our infrastructure and often not looked at it that way. We focus on other components of the infrastructure, but agriculture and food clearly are right up there in my estimation, and are vulnerable to terrorist attacks with bioweapons and undeliberate infectious disease outbreaks. And I think the U.S. is unprepared to confront these threats.
Myers called on Congress to enact enforceable statutes before, he says, it just becomes too late. Well, let's turn our attention now to what's happened in the cash grain market. We're joined by Matt Bennett. He's at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Hey, thanks so much for being with us this afternoon. We sure do appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. Appreciate being on.
So as we were discussing earlier with Dan Zwicker, December contract in the corn expired at the noon hour. There's a 10-cent difference between the expiration of the December corn contract. It's 10 cents lower than the March. So the question really is, will the March dive down and try to fill that?
You know, I don't know that it's going to do that right off the bat. I think a lot remains to be seen, but certainly there's not a whole lot right now to really get the market excited. So one would have to assume the path of least resistance would be lower. I would have to think that we're going to hover around this 345 to 350 range for the time being, but a lot of this is just going to depend upon what, you know, if we do get any sort of life in this bean market come in. You know, is South America going to end up having anything more than just a little blip as far as a weather event? But bottom line, you need beans at least to not go down every day if you want to keep corn from dipping down there and filling that gap.
Yeah, so we've had 6 out of the last 7 sessions where beans have closed lower. We've got enough in the marketplace that tomorrow will be better?
Well, it's really tough to say. You know, the thing about the bean market right now is that, you know, it obviously seems like there's a void of sellers. You know, a few of the funds seem to be scaling out of some of their long positions. I think that if you don't have a South American weather story, one thing you do have is that acreage is robust, and there's a lot of talk that U.S. acreage could be robust. So it's awfully hard to get in the buying mode in the lack of some sort of a weather event. So I think sideways might be the best hope for the time being in the void of a weather issue.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us today. We'll talk with you again next week.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Matt Bennett is with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for a Thursday afternoon. We're now joined by Mike Tenorum. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Hey, good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome, Todd. Always great to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about South America. This is where we've been focusing for the past, several weeks, maybe more than a month now. Argentina had been very dry, though it appears this is about to change.
Well, they still are very dry, but you're right. Things are about to change. Nearly the entire growing belt of Argentina was drier than normal over the last 30 days, and about three-quarters of it was drier than normal over the last 2 months. This is a long period of time to be that dry, and they do need some rain for both corn and soybeans. As we go forward, there are a number of opportunities for rain. We saw a few showers over the last 24 hours, and we have a couple more thunderstorms that'll move through Saturday and Sunday. But the main reason that we think it's going to turn wetter in Argentina is because of what follows from early next week forward. There will be a number of storm systems that move through Argentina, and those will each trigger thunderstorm clusters in varying areas at varying times over the following 7 to 10 days. Because of all that, we're looking for widespread rainfall of 1.25 to 2.5 inches, which will wipe out the topsoil dryness problem that exists today, and it probably will alleviate a lot of the subsoil dryness as well. The big question then becomes what happens next. Well, we only can look forward about 2 weeks with any confidence. So we first need to get through all of these rain events, and then we'll reevaluate here at the end of the month to see how things look heading into January.
However, if we look backwards over those 2 months, it was a very large portion, if I remember correctly from our conversation last week, of the growing regions that have been impacted. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Our proprietary application shows that 96% of first crop corn production was drier than normal over the last 30 days in Argentina, and soybeans aren't faring a whole lot better. 92% of those were drier than normal over the same period.
When you look further to the north in South America, what do you find for places like Paraguay, Uruguay, and the production areas of Brazil?
Well, they all need some rain. They're all in the same situation. It hasn't been quite as dry, that being said, in parts of Brazil, simply because they saw a couple of rains that Argentina missed out on. But they're also going to turn a lot wetter. So we're basically in a scenario here where we're looking at a fairly significant problem right in front of us. But if you just look a little bit behind there, there's a whole lot of rain coming up. So this is the type of scenario that we've seen a lot of over the last 3, 4, 5 years. It seems like every time there's the potential for a drought to develop in some area of the world, including the United States, that problem gets wiped out very quickly with a couple of big rain events. I think that's what's going to happen here again.
On that note, farmers are beginning, and others, to discuss the dry regions in the U.S., especially across the Midwest, as it might relate to next growing season. However, if memory serves, just doesn't matter until we get into that change of time frame around March.
Yeah, I agree. Weather at this time of the year is not correlated to weather in the spring or weather in the summer. So even if you know exactly what's going to happen here over the next, say, 2, 4, 6 weeks, it just doesn't tell us much of anything beyond that. And because of that, we don't like to draw big conclusions from weather in the middle of the winter. You simply have to wait until the spring and then wait until the summer and kind of see how everything unfolds. There's plenty of examples going back in the past where you can see where a dry period like this is followed by big rains, and then a couple of examples where it simply continued, like in 1988, which is always one of the worrisome years for farmers to be talking about. But again, at this point in time, we just aren't that excited about it. It's way too early, and there are some pretty good rain and snow chances coming up here in about 7 to 10 days, so keep an eye out for that.
Thanks so much, Mike.
You're welcome, Todd.
That, of course, is Mike Tenora. He is with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.